Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Dresses with blue satin sashes, snowflakes that stay on my nose and eyelashes, silver white winters that melt into springs. These are a few of my favourite things.
And your blood pressure goes down at this moment. The wonderful Julie Andrews in Rodgers and Hammerstein's The Sound of Music. They're a favourite musical, of course, for many. And it hit the big screen 60 years ago this year. It was a massive success at the time and still so loved. And would you believe Julie Andrews will celebrate her 90th birthday tomorrow? And here to tell us more about her sensational career and iconic musical moments, I'm joined by Aideen Gormley, presenter of Movies and Musicals on RTE. Lyric FM. You're very welcome.
Thanks, Aideen. Claire. Lovely to be here.
And you have met Julie Andrews and you've interviewed her numerous times.
Yeah, I'm and I lucky. Yeah,
aren't
she's,
you just?
She's quite something. It is very nice when you get the answer that yes, she says yes to the interview. I've been lucky enough to interview her twice on the Lyric FM airwaves because she had two parts of her memoir out. And then she came here, people remember 10 years ago, which was the 50th anniversary of The Sound of Music. And fair play to Gráinne Humphreys, director of the Dublin International Film Festival. Quite a coup to get Julie Andrews to come here. So there was a public interview in the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre, and she also went down to the Savoy Cinema for a screening of The Sound of Music. And I mean, Claire, people just adored her. They were so excited to see her. And do you know what it is about her? It's nostalgia, I think. I mean, that's certainly what I felt and what people in the room felt. But it's also because she's so associated with everybody's childhood, because everybody sees Mary Poppins. Everybody watches The Sound of Music, you know, pretty much once a year, I think,
yes,
for a lot of people, because you can watch it again and again. So that was the magic of it. And for me, before I even met her in person, those radio interviews were down the line. She was in the States. So it was just suddenly hearing her voice. You know, it could be nobody else's voice, mm-hmm, but Julie Andrews. And you immediately sort of sit up. Maybe it's because she played nannies or something, but you feel you need to be on your best behaviour. It's Julie Andrews.
She has that incredible diction as well.
Yeah.
I mean, her speaking voice is beautiful. What was your impression of her as a person then when you met her?
When I met her, very warm and... She knew what she was at. She knew in front of a live audience what she had to do. And she'd been asked, of course, those questions numerous times. But she was very, very giving. And I found actually she told me a little bit more in terms of off-the-cuff stories on radio. I found when she was in front of an audience, she was a bit more...
reserved?
A bit more reserved and didn't want to... For example, I remember it had come out at the 50th anniversary of The Sound of Music 10 years ago, that famous scene before they sing, you know, I must have done something good, with Christopher Plummer, that they'd a bit of a fit of the giggles. You know, and this story had come out. And I remember asking or kind of nudging her to tell that story. And she sort of said, oh, well, let's not spoil it.
Okay.
So she's very aware of the fans, mm-hmm, which is lovely.
Her singing voice was discovered at a very early age. And we should say she's a fascinating backstory, her childhood and so on, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
But the singing voice, who discovered that she could sing as she was when she was a child?
So her parents divorced. And I think she found that very hard. She adored her father. And her mother then, she was 7 years old when she had to move in with her mother and stepfather. And I think that was tricky for her. But in fairness, she says it was her stepfather who discovered her voice. He was a tenor. In fact, that the parents had a sort of a vaudeville act. And she had this fully formed larynx and she had a freaky 4-octave range. And this was at 7. So he actually gave her her first singing lessons. And then they decided, no, we need to get her a better teacher. And she mentions this incredible teacher, Lillian Stiles Allen was her name, a wonderful mentor. So taught her all of those really important techniques, diction being, as you say, a huge one, breathing techniques and everything else. So this was huge in terms of her basic training at a young age.
Okay, so her parents or her stepfather and her mother had this act together.
Mm.
And she became part of that act, did she?
She became part of that act. And, you know, I think that was tricky enough in that this is wartime London and they were very poor. I mean, that first memoir, actually the first part of the memoir I found more interesting because I didn't know about that backstory. But she was singing at this point. But just to give listeners an idea of what her voice was like, there is a clip of her. This is Julie Andrews singing at the age of 12.
Oh,
incredible.
Isn't it? And as you can hear there, it's quite operatic. And apparently her singing teacher had sort of hoped she would go that way. But Julie Andrews herself realised that her voice wasn't quite for grand opera. But I think, Claire, that training stood to her because she had all the vocal techniques to take her through into musical theatre. But as you say, she was performing then. Initially, it was Ted and Barbara Andrews, her mother and stepfather, with Julie Andrews in small writing. And then it was Julie Andrews with Ted and Barbara. You know, that's how quickly it changed. And I think it was tough, though, that upbringing, because she was literally responsible for a lot of the financial end of things for the family.
Okay.
And she just give little things away, like, you know, she would put herself to bed. Both her mother and her stepfather had drinking issues. And she'll just give a little line in her memoir saying, "And I had to lock my bedroom door." Things
okay.
like that.
So, and he, I take it, found it tough, in particular, her stepfather, when she became the star of the family.
Yeah, she admits herself. I mean, she has so much to thank him for. She, you know, he did recognise that she had this voice. But at the same time, I suppose for a 14-year-old to eclipse you when you're a tenor, she does, you know, acknowledge that it mm-hmm. can't have been easy. But at the same time, she does also say that her mother gave her this love of theatre, but she still goes back to her birth father saying that he kept her level-headed because, you know.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Because so many child stars we hear about, particularly from that era, gosh, even now, you know, don't stay level-headed and find life very, very tough. But she's always stayed very, very together.
Yeah, there is that. And I think it is remarkable because it was a tough childhood, which is to say I didn't know a lot about. So I think her father is a great part of this. But she also told me that she did recognise how lucky she was to have this talent. She did not want to mess that up. And in this next clip, we hear her talking about, you know, just being a well-adjusted person.
I was also aware, really aware, of how blessed I was to have a talent. I think if I hadn't had the gift of my voice, I probably might have been a very lost, rather foolish child. But because I had that talent and because I had a gift and the responsibility of actually looking after the family a great deal, I think those kind of obligations dominated and luckily, I made it through. I mean, teens are never easy for any kid, but I got through them.
She sounds like she had the weight of the world on her shoulders,
she?
You know,
yeah.
Financial responsibility for the family as a child.
Mm.
So the big breakthrough then onto the Broadway stage. How did that happen, Aideen?
So she was in Cinderella in the London Palladium at the age of 17, and the director of a musical called The Boyfriend in London offered her the lead role of Polly on Broadway. She said she was, you know, thrilled but terrified because she was just 19 starting off. She couldn't bring any family members with her. So think about it. You know, you're 19 heading off to Broadway. You've had no experience at all. You know, her vaudeville experience obviously was great. But she did say in those early days, I don't know if it was a director or a producer said to her, you know, that wasn't great, was it, in the early rehearsals? And said to her, look, do what I tell you to do and it'll be fine. So obviously she was a sponge for knowledge and for any help. And she took all of that help and she was great. But her one issue with doing The Boyfriend was they asked her to sign a 2-year contract. And again, her father gave her great advice. He said, look, it might not last that long. You know, go over. It's going to be great for you. She decided to sign a 1-year contract. And this was the best thing she ever did because she ended up really impressing everybody in The Boyfriend. Next thing, My Fair Lady was going to happen. And the producers of My Fair Lady came to her saying, look, we'd love you to play the lead, but we presume you have signed a 2-year contract. She said, no, I'm finishing up in a few weeks.
So there she was.
So there
the next
she
gig.
Was, ready to go. And you have to remember, you know, this was Lerner and Lowe who wrote My Fair Lady. Like, incredible to originate this role. She says, again, a major learning curve. But the composers were there to help her along. But she tells great stories about this, Claire. I mean, she was, the first preview was a little bit outside of New York. There was a storm that night and they decided nobody's going to travel. So the whole cast were told, you know, we're not going to go on, you're fine. And also Rex Harrison, who was playing the male lead, he was incredibly nervous. If you remember him on the soundtrack, he almost talks as opposed to sings, but he gets away with it.
Mm-hmm.
But he'd never really done a musical like this before. So they were all kind of heading off. Next thing, word spread. No, everybody's coming, actually. Everybody's in their cars and they're about to arrive. And this is, again, typical Julie Andrews. She found everybody. She said, no, we are going on. She calmed Rex Harrison down. She said, you know, you have to go on it. You'll never work in this town again. And the show did go on. And I think that is Julie Andrews. She is that.
That was
that
the
person.
Years of experience, exactly. though, wasn't it, that she already had?
Yeah.
But that was such a demanding role, wasn't it? How many shows was she doing a week?
So it was ridiculous. She did 8 shows a week for 3.5 years. I mean, picture it. And she tells, again, great stories. She said, look, it was an endurance test. But she tells of you know, the opera singer Maria Callas coming backstage and saying, I don't know how you do it. And to hear that from Maria Callas. But you have to remember, with opera singers, they don't have amplification, whereas in musical theatre, you do. So Maria Callas wouldn't be going on every night. Mm-hmm. An opera singer wouldn't, but in musical theatre you did. Now, she did suffer from vocal fatigue, and you know, she did have to go to the doctor at one point. Even with all the training she had to take a little time off out of pure fatigue. But I did ask her, you know, how do you keep it fresh? 8 shows a week, and this is what she said.
For the first 3 months, you relearn everything you've been working on. You solidify it and make sure that you know the piece really well and how to do it. And then the following 3 months, you really enjoy it and flesh it out and find lovely new nuances in the way you play it and so on. And then by about the 9-month period of a long run, if you're so lucky as to have a long run, you start listening to the counter melodies in the orchestrations, and you deal with many things that keep you fresh, and you find sort of basic strengths that keep you focused. And then the last 3 months of a year's run is sheer slog, and you do everything you can to stay fresh, because the audience does not know that you gave a good performance last evening. They're there for that evening, and they want the gift of that. They want the communion of that with you.
So she was keeping it fresh for all of that time. She went on then to star in Camelot on Broadway opposite Richard Burton, and he would have a reputation, of course, as a great actor, but also as a bit of a ladies' man and a drinker. What was her experience of him?
Yeah, this was interesting, and you know, she did say, even with Camelot, same Lerner and Lowe, same composers as My Fair Lady. And she knew it wasn't quite as good. My Fair Lady was so great. But she was really excited to star opposite Richard Burton. Listeners will recall that our own Richard Harris played this role in the screen version, but it was Richard Burton on Broadway with Julie Andrews. And yeah, she knew a bit of a reputation, as you say, a bit of a ladies' man. And yeah, she did say to me that, you know, he did try and make a pass at her, which she wasn't too happy about, as we'll hear.
But by the time he did get around to perhaps noticing me, I was on to his many tales and his drinking habits and his quirks and idiosyncrasies, and was happily able to resist them. I say happily because who knows what I missed? I really don't know. But he was a good friend. But he did try to make what I believe was an attempt at some kind of a pass, and by that time, and he did it rather badly. He did it so that he made me very angry. But he made me extremely angry, and that he did it publicly. And we didn't speak to each other for about a week, but eventually he apologized handsomely, and we were great friends after that. We really were.
I like her style. She had his number pretty quickly, it sounds like.
Exactly. And interesting, again, that was from the radio interview. I nudged her to tell that in the Borgash Energy Theatre. Again, with the audience, she didn't go
she
there.
She wouldn't go there.
It's interesting,
yeah,
isn't it?
It is. Fascinating.
But she dealt well with it, yeah.
So then when, I mean, obviously My Fair Lady was her huge success, the first Broadway role, and she was so celebrated for that. But then they went on to make the movie version and they cast Audrey Hepburn.
Yeah, this was very, very tough. Basically, at that time, Hollywood didn't care if you were huge on Broadway. Things have changed now. If you think of even Lin-Manuel Miranda in Hamilton, Hollywood were coming calling immediately, going, we need to get this guy on the screen. But then it didn't matter. Hollywood needed a movie star. So it must have been incredibly hard for her to have played that role for 3.5 years. And next thing, Audrey Hepburn gets the role. And remember also, Audrey Hepburn didn't have the singing voice. Her singing voice was dubbed in it. So really hard. But, you know, a door closes, window opens. But she then was offered the role of Mary Poppins. And Mary Poppins, what we know now, was a massive, massive hit and won her an Oscar. So, you know, if that hadn't happened, Mary Poppins wouldn't have happened. We can't imagine Mary Poppins without Julie Andrews.
And The Sound of Music, which you've already touched on, I mean, released 60 years ago, it's just an incredible draw, you know, even for young audiences of today, they'll still love it.
Isn't it incredible? It was actually on the other night, probably because she's going to be 90 tomorrow. But, you know, five Oscars, a huge success. I asked her as well, you know, what did she think was so amazing about it? And she said, well, it's family fare. The music is glorious, the scenery. And she loved actually the seven children. She loved minding them. She really did. She's such a motherly figure. She said it's a true love story and it's meticulously made. And it was a happy experience for her making it. And she does talk about the awful weather in Salzburg that they had to contend with. I mean, there was obviously a big budget. You know, they went to Salzburg. It looks magnificent, but it rained a lot and there was a lot to contend with. But people will watch it again and again, won't they?
Well, let's hear a little clip of it.
Let's see how well you listened.
Oh, I won't need to whistle for them, Reverend Captain. I mean, I'll use their names. And such lovely names.
Fräulein, this is a large house. The grounds are very extensive and I will not have anyone shouting. You will take this, please. Learn to use it. The children will help you. Now, when I want you, this is what you will hear.
Oh, no, sir. I'm sorry, sir. I could never answer to a whistle. Whistles are for dogs and cats and other animals, but not for children, and definitely not for me. It would be too humiliating.
Fräulein, were you this much trouble at the Abbey?
Oh, much more, sir.
Yeah, I'm tempted to sit back down again and watch it, isn't it?
And isn't she a great all-rounder there? You know, the beautiful singing voice, but she can do comedy as well, you know, as she showed in Mary Poppins as well. She's so talented.
And you know, outside of those two very famous roles we've mentioned, she had a really long and successful career beyond those hits.
She really did. I mean, she said one is best remembered for the things that are the most successful, but other roles included the Americanization of Emily. She was in Torn Curtain, Thoroughly Modern Millie, 10, Victor and Victoria. But then, interestingly, she went on to enjoy a really successful career with voiceover work. So, you know, younger audiences got to enjoy her as the voiceover in Shrek and the Despicable Me season. And then she was in The Princess Diaries, of course, with Anne Hathaway, which was gorgeous. And more recently then, she won actually just an Emmy a few weeks ago as the voice of Lady Whistledown in Bridgerton. So she's enjoyed a really successful voiceover
career.
She
certainly has. Mm. And we have a listener who would like to mention their mum, Mary, who celebrated her 99th birthday on September 2nd. So you've got 9 years on Julie Andrews. And this lady is currently Fermoy Choral Society's oldest member. She took part in all of the Rodgers and Hammerstein productions and loved all of the stage musicals.
Brilliant.
There you go. Aideen, thank you so much. Aideen Gormley there, presenter of movies and musicals on RT Lyric FM.